The night my stepdad pulled the trigger on my father is a story, and wild because it happened on my birthday. That summer prior, my parents were splitting like a pomegranate. My dad had moved on to a lady friend in Burbank with this yellow Continental and a swimming pool apartment where children were not allowed all that often, but there were bowls of M&Ms and cassette tapes of the Eagles everywhere. My mom cajoled the four of us kids into a red Corolla wagon with a milk crate full of apples, a spray bottle from Mojave, and we drove up 395, 13 hours to my grandfather's ranch, with mom asking anyone who farted if they didn't need to poop away at a rest stop. My step-grandfather's ranch, I guess. He adopted my mom in her teens when her real dad died of diabetes, but in the 6 years since my nana passed away, they had off-shot into their own immediate family, like makeshift in-laws often do. And we just sort of dropped by, pretty awkward, the night before this big annual Labor Day barbecue. Now, they were cut to beef to the we got penciled in as wild cards for the cocaine tournament, but the next day went just fine, with the water fights and this crazy porcupine we saw, and even a couple of pretty cute girls who technically weren't my cousins in there. On Indian Rock, just out of pellet gun range from the porch, where for centuries Modoc women had pounded the acorns into acorn mash, my mother met a teacher with shoulders as rounded as an action figure you were melting, and she managed it later into stepdad. So my father got wind of some of it, or all of it, and he rode up next day on his motorcycle. I imagine adrenaline got him all the way to the hatchet and then melodrama afterwards, but he rolled in on Labor Day Tuesday, the sunset and ranch dust in his way, with his muscles and his mustache, and I remember thinking just how flipping cool some cops are. But things were really frosty between him and mom regardless, and he actually bunked in the barn that night while the rest of us kids were crapped out in the big room of his ranch house with the deer head over the mantle and the rack of copper kettles that Montana used to conjure steam out of. I was just about asleep when I heard my step-grandfather's second wife ask him, "Aren't you going with that fellow inside?" And he got back, "I don't even like this son of a bitch, I never have." And he said, "You know, this is the man who answered the door when my father, in a ducktail haircut, a rented tuxedo, and a very wayward smile, if you go by the photograph, showed up to take my mom to the prom." But anyway, the next day we caravan south as a family, three kids and mom in the wagon, and me, the firstborn son, and my father, and an excess of 1,100 pounds, just that one heavy, so I wore it, slumped and a bucket on my shoulders. And my dad would hold his clutch hand up like this to indicate an antelope or something in the distance, and the kids kept passing his crackers to the car at 60 miles an hour, and my dad shouted back, "Never do this with anything metallic. Not even a piece of gum with a wrapper still on it. Motion causes ionic charge that will knock you on your ass like a lightning bolt," he said. "It's called grounding." And the ground did warp beneath us so sharply the better painted line looked solid all the way to Simi Valley, a suburb of Los Angeles, where Dad played nice and played house with us for 3 or 4 more days, and I began the 8th grade with wrestling in my PE class and typing as an elective on one of those old elective jobs with correction tip removed. So the teacher would dictate and hand in a book he already saw his mistake. And then a few weeks later, I got taken. This Wednesday after homework, my mom said I should go ahead and sleep over at my best friend Dinky Ringo's house that evening, which was odd for a school night. But who's going to argue with HBO and Atari? And so I woke up next morning with my mother and my stepfather, my soon-to-be stepfather, leaning over me. And he lived far away, right? And he couldn't find my suits because I'd left them out by Dinky the Coops. He could have either get me still half asleep or fool around looking for my coolest pair of sneakers. So he put me bedside in the car with my stepdad and you all after us. And all I thought to ask was, what about my python? Because I had one, 8 feet long, well-fed, and perfect as a dinosaur. And my mother assured me that even though his cage took up a whole quarter of the trailer, he was back there. And so we drove to like 20,000 leagues to the lumber town of Susanville and the Lake Forest Trailer Park, allocated to the side of a mountain 8,750 feet tall, with 5 grand of that beneath us, so the altitude could take the lungs of a sea level kid and make them taste like sobbing. And the alpine chill that is below your cold blooded heart, the pause before a hiccup, is in my python. Still in his cage, like a camouflaged fire that was frozen stiff with meat in it. But we were all so busy cramming bunk beds and refugees into this lifelong bachelor's double wide that I didn't have time to mourn, let alone bury them, so I left them just outside with the laughter. By morning time, the raccoon and the possum had gotten to it. He'd been picked almost clean of giant banquet either. And my apologetic science teacher stepfather muttered how we probably should have done better. And he was right, because my dad had always said, in the U.S. of A., there's not that many animals that will kill you, but there's a whole lot of creatures who can eat you. And so I nodded at the guy, and I drove with him every day down the mountain into town in that junior high where he was moderately unpopular with the kids in their big adequate jackets, the hit town slang, and they were rooting for the Yankees over Dodgers in the series. And I kept saying, when I get back to California, and they would interrupt, you are in California, you stupid. And it stayed like that for weeks and weeks until a court date came around November 1st, and so we all had to drive down on my birthday. So when you are born on Halloween, you might assume when you're 3 or 4 that kids are getting dressed up just to celebrate. And the question of how old is too old to fit, that's as awkward as an anomaly. And I knew that at 5:35 I was going to turn into a teenager. And at 5:15 we were cresting the freeway passing in my hometown. And the wildest brush fires in Simi Valley history, flames on hillsides and three directions, and the sun so low because of daylight savings that shone in the smoke like an Armageddon lollipop. And I got dropped off first at Klepto Stephen Howard's house, this kid we knew from church whose place was far enough away and didn't snake his back and settle. And so we spent the evening loading captains into BB guns and firing tranquilizer darts into the jacket. And it must have been just about the perfect time of night to start a drive-in movie when the party of the first part, meaning mom and now my stepdad, drove to the house they abandoned in September, where the party of the second part, meaning dad and now my stepmom, were living and listening with an old cat and a new couch for children at the doors that wanted in, but not for a couple of Reno, Nevada newlyweds digging through the kitchen after Christmas dinner. And so the driveway alone has a bona fide version of the skirmish that my mom describes as violent, and my dad describes as cocksucker, meaning a stepdad, who introduced, they all agree, a 357 Magnum into the square then, and that, on the spectrum of handguns, is pretty damn well home. And so my stepmom ran off for the neighbor in a standoff effort, with dad thinking probably 1,800 feet per second muzzle blast, and stepdad thinking maybe dialogue from those paperback westerns with titles like The Quick and the Dead, but he was needed, because my father, in a move rehearsed by prison inmates all across the nation, lunged and torqued the pistol away just as my stepdad pulled the trigger, and the hammer caught my father in the web between his thumb and his forefinger, so just so close that no bullet, no gunshot, no bloodshed, no family of bats can be scooped out from under the awnings of my childhood, just brush by, and silence poking down the street. While my father tucks the weapon in his waistband, crosses his arms, and draws out, "You keep your hands up, asshole, or they'll kill you." But the local cops cuff them both, and charges were ultimately dropped into a whole caseload of jail, with the only real-time damages being one dead python, one leg scar for my father, and me not knowing how to take very well, or the rest of them. And so days on hundreds of days went down, like rivets in a rainbow, until it's 1 hour prior to the year 2000. And my brother, who turned out so charming, he doesn't really need that mandolin. He's telling a whole bar table full of Venetians just why is it we grew up in such a place. And I think I can gather through the babble of all his nonchalant Italian, my brother was witness to this whole fiasco, or most of it was, and he got me dropped off last, just one block over, at Kevin and Justin's Alex's house, this weird fraternal place who always liked to dress the thing. And so they loaned him a costume, and were working their way around the corner when my stepmom comes running down the sidewalk yelling, "Kids, don't go up there, there's a man with a gun." And he thought that she looked a little bit familiar, but she didn't recognize him because of the costume. And so he watched with the rest of the scandalized neighborhood through the perfect little peepholes of his plastic mask, all those innuendo still lives of our scrapbook. He saw the stand-up, the legendary tic-tac that drive away our fathers in patrol cars and talk about something you never talk about. I never knew that, that he saw all that, until the firecrackers of the Y2K are turning champagne glass in a strap, and the midnight bells of San Marco make me lean into his shoulder and ask my brother with a dying ear for detail, just what was it? I was curious, the borrowed Halloween costume and the war bag. But this is 6 collective setbacks ago. This is his wild card prologue of America. This is the kind of thought you put to bed and never even wonder if it leaves it. So my brother, my kid brother, handsome gypsy brother for the life of him, he took them to jail.